Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back with more Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and along with Dr. Michael Gilbert. Lots of callers still on the line. We're talking, looks like eyes.
Yay.
A lot of eyes questions.
Oh, goody.
There we go. Dr. Mixon, you were going to share something.
Well, this lady's got an issue getting her son into the country for medical care. My daughter was born back in 2012, and when my wife was pregnant, her parents wanted to come to help out with the birth, you know, and help us for a few months after the child was born. So they applied for a visa, a tourist visa, to come in for, you know, for up to 6 months, and they were rejected. Mm. And so they applied a second time, and they were rejected. So we went and saw our Congress people and talked to them in person, went to their offices, and...
This is a doctor and his wife.
Yes.
Wow.
And I got a little hot under the collar when I was talking to our congressional representative. And, in fact, when we left, my wife said, you know, in China, if you talk to a government official that way, you'd be in prison. You talk to him like he worked for you. And I said, son, honey, he does work for me, and he's a temp. You know, if we don't like him, we throw him out at the next election. But so three separate times we applied, and three separate times they were denied. And that last denial was after I tried to get intercession from the State Department. I'm an aggressive person. I go after what I want. So the State Department made a suggestion to us. They said, look, you've applied three times and you've been denied, and they're not going to let them come and visit because your wife is their only child, and that's a connection to America, and we're afraid that if they come to visit, they'll stay. But we have a solution. All you have to do is have them put in an application to immigrate to the United States, and we'll give them a green card, and they can come and stay. And I said, wait a minute. You won't let them visit because you're afraid they might stay. And so your solution is they should immigrate and stay when they don't want to stay to America.
That makes so much sense, yeah. Not.
And so
it defies any rational evaluation.
So following the government's instructions, we had them apply to immigrate to America. They were rapidly approved. They were able to come and be here for the delivery. And in fact...
So you did it.
We did it.
Unbelievable. Wow.
And my father-in-law stayed for 2 years to help until Ivory was 2 years old.
Oh.
And then he went back to China because he's retired in China. All his friends and connections and brothers and sisters and everybody's in China. He doesn't want to be an American. He just wanted to see his granddaughter born.
Of course.
Yes.
But I've never gotten over the fact that, you know, the solution is you can't come visit because you might stay, but if you come and stay, that's just fine.
Wow.
only to a politician does that make any sense.
Now, if she was to be born, you know, like last year, he could have just flown in and come across the southern border.
Well, my wife and I were looking at a post from a Chinese family. And it was actually a Chinese family of five, okay? And they were talking about how they came to America illegally. And they were posting this on Chinese websites so that millions and millions of Chinese are now seeing how easy it is to come to America.
Perfect.
And what they said was, we wanted to come to America. So what we did was we got a visa for Japan because we've never been there. So we flew to Japan and we took a 10-day vacation in Japan. And then we got on Air Mexico and we flew to Mexico City. And in Mexico City, we got on a bus to Tijuana and we rode up to Tijuana. And in Tijuana, the nice government guides were nice enough to show us where in the fence we could go through. So we got in line for 1,000 or more people and we just walked through the fence. And on the other side of the fence, they said, we're the government immigration police. And they welcomed us and said, welcome
to America.
And they took us to San Diego and the Catholic services put us up in a nice hotel. And they said that we could only stay in the hotel for 2 days because there were so many other people coming behind us that they had to have the room. But they said, you know, we found it was a wonderful experience and everybody was so kind and welcoming and there was no problem at all in coming to America through Mexico. Now, 1 billion Chinese just read this. So, yeah.
And they didn't have any cartel involvement or anything?
No, because this is an affluent family. So, they could afford airline flights and vacations in Japan on the way.
Right. So. Nice.
Wow.
Sort of the Steve Jobs introduction to how to get to America.
How to get to America.
There
yes.
you go.
Great.
Okay.
So you don't bother with the State Department. You just fly down to Mexico, get on a bus, and go to Tijuana.
There you
That's
go.
All.
All right.
I think my head is going to explode.
Ouchie. And, you know, check out the zoo in San Diego while you're there.
Why not?
They may give you free passes for you and your family.
Did they evaluate? Did they rate the hotel?
No, they did. But they did say that everybody from the time they hit the border was kind and warm and welcoming them to America.
Charming.
Okay.
So.
Leading Edge Medicine is, yeah.
And I contrast that with my in-laws.
Right.
Who wanted to come legally.
Legally.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, no. Sorry.
So, no. If you want to come to America, you know, you don't apply to the State Department.
Yeah.
You apply to the drug cartels because they're in charge of America's border.
Yeah. I could have saved so much with my husband who was immigrating from Canada the right way.
Yes.
How long it took and how he got treated like a criminal every time. And
yes.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
We didn't get our weekend in San Diego.
No, ma'am.
Let's take some more calls. Let's go to Shelton right now. We have Paul with a question for Dr. Gilbert. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello.
Let's talk
there.
Eyes.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Paul.
Yes.
Hi, Paul.
Hello there. I'm the guy that called up several weeks ago about the thymus gland regeneration.
Okay.
Yes.
And and one of the things I was wondering.
This is definitely a Dr. Mixon thing.
Well, it initially was, but
It
also will be a Dr. Gilbert.
Bring it home. Bring it to me.
Because one of the things I would ask the people who are conducting the study is, are they looking at the Mobian gland?
Oh, I know where you're going.
Could they start looking at the Mobian gland before the participants begin the program and then, you know, throughout their participation to see if it is regenerating the Mobian glands?
The, the glands, this is a secretory gland that creates copious, compared to the size of the gland, copious moment-by-moment secretions to the surface of the eye. So I'd be surprised if it responds in exactly the same way as the thymus. But I don't see any reason that it couldn't. Maybe every gland in the body is growing when you do that. So, but I think we obviously don't know any of that.
Well, let me get in this, because after your call several weeks ago, I delved into the literature and actually contacted the people at Stanford that are doing the studies, and have gathered a whole lot of information. And in fact, have proposed a couple of variations on their studies, and they're doing a series of studies now. That first one was quite small, only 10 people. The second one was 20 some people, and they've got studies 3, 4, and 5 now, that are they're kind of getting geared up for. The thymus gland study in and of itself is primarily the immune system. We're looking at ways to kick out T cell, memory T cells, that protect us against recurrent infections and cancers. And by the time you're 50, you don't have a lot of memory T cells left, just because they've all been used up. Every time you get a mutated cell, every time you get an infection, you're using the naive, the as yet unused T cells to develop a resistance against that particular foreign invader. And we don't generally make very many after childhood. In fact, by puberty, the numbers are starting to drop significantly. And by the time we're adults, the numbers are almost non-existent. We make a few, but not a lot.
The decline begins with puberty.
Yes. Well, actually, no. The decline now we now know that used to be the dogma, but we now know that much of the decline is even before puberty. They used to think that it was the rise in the sex hormones that caused the thymus to start involuting, but it's already involuting before the sex hormones start rising, and so it looks like that's more of a coincidental finding. And in fact, to regenerate the thymus gland, they're using growth hormone, high dose DHEA, and metformin.
Metformin,
and they're using the metformin because it has an anti-aging tissue regeneration effect, but also because it lowers blood sugar, and they were worried that the growth hormone might raise blood sugar. So those are the three components, and they're finding that within less than a year, they can get the thymus gland to regenerate about four times its current size, and that the regeneration was going faster. So in the later studies, they're going for longer periods of time, and they're doing older and older people. In the first study, the oldest person was 65. In the second study, the oldest person was 80. And so they're extending the age range as they're repeating the studies. But the question is, to your direction on the meibomian glands, as to whether that was actually the thymus regeneration that might help, or the growth hormone, which helps every tissue in your body to grow and heal and repair. Okay. Mm-hmm. My guesstimate, and again, we don't have a formal study on meibomian glands as yet. But I think they will be looking at eyes within the next couple of years.
If you heard earlier in the program, we were talking about my experience finding this disease, because I now look for it. I think many of my colleagues do not. I look for it in young people, including teenagers. Most wouldn't see it because why would they look at that? They're kids. Why would they have problems? So I see permanent gland loss in teens and 20s and 30s. And tell them, you need to get this under control. I say, your best hope, though, is, I believe, at their age, and I always joke, it ain't going to happen in my lifetime, but I think it will in yours, we'll be regrowing these glands.
Yeah.
So I'm to exactly your point, I really am an optimist that we'll figure out how to regrow these glands.
If I had to take my best shot at how to do something like regrow the glands, because we're seeing the effect on the prostate and the heart and the lungs and the kidneys, it would be growth hormone and rapamycin. Those two would be, I think, our most likely interventions. Now, I have not seen studies on either of them, but if I were guessing it based on what we do know, those would be my two best shots.
So my only change in my perspective is I've long believed that we can regrow those, but I thought it was not going to be in my lifetime. I now think it will be.
Yep. I would not be surprised.
It could be happening with the current study that they're doing. They're just not looking for it.
Precisely. Yeah. We don't know what else is happening because you only see what you look for.
Right. And it's not just meibomian glands. We ought to be looking at everything, throughout.
Yeah. So, one of the things I am pursuing aggressively is to get an associate practice with me down somewhere where the medical board actually follows the law and the science so that we can so we can get growth hormone for our patients who need it.
Are we the only state or just one of the few states?
There are three states Three states that believe that federal law forbids growth hormone. And they were Washington, Oregon, and Massachusetts. Washington, Oregon, and Massachusetts. The other 47 states actually follow the federal courts on matters of federal law. But in this state, the medical board overrules the federal courts on matters of federal law.
And I think if there was a we'll put it this way, if there was a sufficient evidence that there would be a benefit to having growth hormone allowed for certain purposes like anti-aging, then I think we could get that changed.
Well, we might, but rather than trust the political system, I'd just rather get a clinic in Texas or Florida. Send my patients there once a year.
I would bet on being able to do that over changing the Washington state legislature.
There you go. I'm voting for a clinic in Hawaii. But Paul, we hear the music, so we're going to have to take a break. So thank you so much
for your call, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. And you know what? We will be back in just a moment. And Daniel would like to talk more about rapamycin. So we'll be talking about that, meibomian glands, and with Andy, some talk about congestive heart failure as well. Those are the next few calls on the way with Leading Edge Medicine. And here is the number so you can get through as well. It's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon in the house and Dr. Michael Gilbert. There is not a person in here under 5'10". I love this. I feel so petite next to my 6'2", I'm guessing, and 6'4".
6'4".
6'4", and maybe 6'3".
I'm down from 6'5".
Okay.
Wow. Used to be 6'5", but funny thing happens in life.
Okay, you got a haircutter maybe.
Yeah, that can do it.
We're back with Leading Edge Medicine and taking your calls. 800-465-8770 is that number to get through today. And we have Daniel calling in from Bellevue. Hi there, Daniel.
Hello, Daniel.
Good morning. I just worked a 12-hour night shift, so hopefully my question will make sense. I'm kind of tired, but I wanted to talk to you. So, regarding rapamycin, Dr. Umat mentioned you guys were testing sirolimus. Now, I thought she said, and I thought LabCorp was saying the peak test would be like 1 to 2 hours, and I've heard another doctor say about an hour. I believe you've said the peak is at 15 minutes, and then 90% will be out within about 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a curve.
So I'm just wondering if you guys are formulating a recommendation on when to test for peak and trough, and maybe if you started to come up with any optimal levels. I know this is all kind of new territory for everyone.
Well, it is. Actually, I'm starting to suspect that the blood levels have very little to do with the efficacy, because it seems that much of the effect of rapamycin is actually in our gut, which I think is just kind of fascinating. It changes the histone configuration in the DNA in our bowel. It makes the DNA wind more tightly and is less easily damaged, which I think is kind of fascinating, which is why even with short-term use, you end up with long-term effects. So I, I suspect that in the long run, what we're going to discover is our obsession with blood levels is misguided. And the bulk of the effect is throughout our GI tract, and that it's the interaction between the bugs in our gut and the rest of our bodies with that exosome and acellular vesicle communication between our bowel, which has more cells in it than the rest of our body put together. It's that interplay between our saprophytes in our bowel and the rest of our tissues. Those organisms are sending out acellular vesicles with messenger RNA into our bloodstream that impact every part of our body, including our mood and the way our brain is working. So I, at this point, am looking more at what dose is this person taking, and then what is the physiologic effect on the individual, than I am about what is the blood level. Because we don't really know what the optimal blood level would be anyway. You know, what we know from the animal studies is the higher the dose we use, the longer the animals lived. And it didn't matter so much whether you gave it once a week, every other day, or every day. The higher total weekly dose that the animals got, the better they did. So you know, it's one of those things of, okay, what is the ideal dose for the physiologic effects we're looking for, not what is the blood level, because we don't know what the blood level should be anyway. We know what the transplant people are looking for. But what they're looking for is a blood level that will prevent rejection of a foreign tissue into your body. Okay. So that's a whole different question than what level do I need so that my prostate lets me pee better and my eyes let me see better and my skin heals better and my brain works better, and my heart and lungs do better. And you only see what you look for. And so those blood tests are actually designed by the transplant surgeons, not for aging purposes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that was an unexpected answer. They gave me a lot to chew on there.
Yeah. Now, if my goal were to live as long and vigorous a life as I could, which, by the way,
it kind of sounds like. Wait, that'd be me.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Wait.
Yes. My number one drug would not be the rapamycin. I use rapamycin, but my number one drug is the dasatinib quercetin to lower my senescent cell load, because the dasatinib and quercetin combination increased the lifespan in the experimental animals by 36%. The best we've ever gotten with rapamycin was 15%. So for me, if I had to pick one thing, I'd do the senescent cell therapy, because that's given us the best experimental result.
So can we do both and expect 45?
I don't know, but I'm doing both.
Right. So, oh, my gosh, 45%.
Yeah, well, yes.
Jerry Mixon, 143.
And still
yeah, looking good.
Still vigorous.
That's right.
Yes.
Having a great
Another,
time.
Like Mick Jagger.
Well, you know, we had a...
Only better.
Yeah,
Way better.
I saw an interesting comment on the rapamycin board. There's actually a message board on the internet for rapamycin. People that are both self-experimenting and doctors that are using it for their patients. And they said, you know, for years our concept was we want to extend human lifespan. And we're pretty good at that, but we didn't expand health span. People just lived sick longer because we were able to manage their diseases, but we didn't really cure them. Said, now our emphasis has been on health span. But he said, what we're actually looking at now that people are living longer and having hotter, more vigorous lives is, what is our hot span? How long will you be sexually attractive to the opposite sex? So lifespan Healthspan, and now Hotspan.
Okay.
That is, I can't see that hitting the medical literature quite yet.
Not yet.
No, but it'll make it big in Hollywood.
There you go. I see a movie now.
Oh,
Dr. Mixon's Hotspan. His next
book. Is there
book.
Any? I haven't done the dasatinib quercetin yet. Is there any? Gotchas. I mean, I think I've heard of a potential, maybe slight bleeding risk. But is there any supplements or any things potentially to not do dasatinib?
Well, you know, dasatinib, we've got the side effects to that down pretty well, Pat. That drug was actually designed for a form of leukemia. It's a anti-neoplastic designed to kill cancer cells. It turns out that even at much lower doses for shorter periods of time, it does a great job of killing senescent cells because they are far more fragile than the cancer cells. So, but we've got people that have been on dasatinib, tens of thousands of people that have taken it for years at a time.
Continuously.
Yeah. Every day for 5-6 years. Whereas when we use it to kill senescent cells, we're using it for 3 days at a time. So the adverse effects on a 3-day course as opposed to a 5-year course is, it's a tiny, tiny fraction. So we know what things to look for. But we also know that when we use it for 3 days on and 4 days off, and we only do that, you know, a cycle of three courses, total of 9 days over 3 weeks, the risks of significant adverse effects are minimal. The only thing I notice is by that my third course, I kind of get headachy and a little tired. And then the next day when I don't take the medicine, it's all gone. So... You know,
okay,
I was just going to say, I've been doing dasatinib.
Dasatinib.
Thank you very much. Okay. I've been doing dasatinib for some time, and I'm totally asymptomatic. Wouldn't know I'm doing it.
Yeah. And I don't get it the first 3-day course, but you only take it 3 days every other month or so.
The first time I did it, I did the 9-day course.
Yeah.
And had no symptoms with that either.
And I don't get any symptoms if I just do 3 days. I do the 9-day course twice a year. I do it about every 6 months. And in between, I'll do a couple of 3 days. But I notice nothing at all with a simple 3-day course. So, anyway, next question is how do we measure what our senescent load is? And I'm going to tell you about that when we come back from the break. But you can hang up or you can hang on.
We're working on that too.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Yep. We'll talk about that, Daniel. So go ahead and hang up if you want and listen in. Then we'll get back to Marilyn, Andy, and John next. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Michael Gilbert today live in the studio. And we will be right back. You stay there.
Living on love, buying on time. Without somebody, nothing ain't worth a dime. Just like an old-fashioned storybook rhyme. Living on love. It sounds simple.
And we're back with Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette. I'm glad you're here. We're glad you've tuned in. Been talking a lot about eyes today. Oh, boy. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, Dr. Michael Gilbert. And Dr. Mixon, you were going to finish up talking about rapamycin.
Well, no, I was going to finish up talking about dasatinib.
Oh, dasatinib, the one I can't say.
Yeah. But you just said it.
Oh, good
job.
Good for you.
I like big words.
Yes. The problem has always been we have not had a good way to measure how many senescent cells you have because every tissue in your body gets senescent at a different rate because they turn over and get replaced at a different rate. So the senescent load in your skin may not be the same as the senescent load in your heart or your lungs or your liver or your bone marrow. So the only way we've been able to measure it in the past is to actually do a biopsy. We have to take a piece of your tissue and stain it to see the senescent cells. But there is a group at Rutgers University that has now published a paper, and they're working on a second one that I think is fascinating, where they have looked at senescent cells in our immune system. And I kind of stumbled into this because I was actually looking at the immune regeneration with the thymus and found that the CD8 T cells are exquisitely sensitive to senescence. And so this group in Rutgers has found a way now to simply take a blood test, isolate the senescent cells from, or isolate the T cells from that, break them down into the CD3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, et cetera, all the way up to 30-something. And it turns out that among all of our immune cells, the CD8 are the ones that get the highest load of senescent cells the earliest in our lives and form them the quickest. And they've done studies now looking at cord blood, 25-year-olds and 65-year-olds, and they can actually see the progression. The older you get, the higher the senescent cell load in your CD8s. And these are then, in a large group of people, it is consistent. It doesn't matter whether you're thin or fat or, you know, male or female or physically active or sedentary. In all of these people, CD8 is the most sensitive. And in all of the people, the older they get, the more senescent CD8s they get. Hmm. And so it looks like we probably have a method that will let us measure what the senescent cell load is in me or you or Dr. Gilbert. And then if we set a threshold and say, I don't want more than X a number, we could treat you, drop your level down, check you again in 2 or 3 months, see what your load is now.
So our treatment becomes much more rational. We're really using data to design a treatment.
Precisely.
Just kind of shooting in the dark.
Right now we're guessing.
You're right.
You know, we say on average, we think it takes about this long to develop a new load of senescent cells. So we're going to treat it that way. But we don't really have a good way of measuring. This group in Rutgers looks like they may have a way that we could use. So, you know, my next goal with them is to get more detail, do some more studies. But if it pans out, then to set up a laboratory so that anybody doing longevity clinics anywhere on the planet can send blood samples in and get the senescent load in their T lymphocytes tested.
I think it's the most exciting thing I've heard this morning.
Wow. Yeah.
So kind of nice. Well, and
it's right up there with those.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of a really.
Although my domain glands that get me
parasites.
Excited. But,
yeah, right. I like those too.
So anyway, that's one of the many irons I have in the fire.
All right. Yes. And so many.
That's an exciting iron.
That is exciting. Back to the phones, which are blinking. We're headed to Tacoma, Maryland. Thank you so much for your patience. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. How can we help?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Marilyn.
Hi there. I'm a patient of yours, Dr. Gilbert. And
very good.
I have the dry eye. Meibomian gland tissue.
Now, very good.
I went in and I had cataract surgery with you.
Yes.
And ever since the cataract surgery, my eyes have gotten worse, and I have now have that issue with the thick fluid around my eyes. And I went back to you. And you told me I needed to get that little brush and get the eyelid and eyelash cleansing oil and clean my eyes twice a day, the margins around my eyes twice a day, and continue
I'm with you.
With the moist heat on my eyes for 10 minutes. Twice a day. I did that for a whole week, and my eyes got so sore I could hardly even blink my eyes without it hurting.
You mean from the
heat? Frustrated. I don't know what to do.
From the heat? I'm not understanding what made you uncomfortable.
That little brush on my margins.
Oh.
Well, then don't brush so hard, don't brush so much, take a break from using the brush. The whole point of the brush is to prevent the biofilm from blocking those glands. So a gentle brush, you know, sounds like you're kind of scrubbing the floor with it. I think just a gentle brush across it.
I'm a little aggressive.
Okay. So I think you take a break from the brush totally for a while. And then when it is totally back to normal comfort, once a day, gently, two swipes across. We're not having to scrub that layer. If you're doing it every day, just a little bit of maintenance. It's not like firm brushing your teeth gently across those glands, and it shouldn't hurt at all. It should just refresh the surface of the gland so that the heat has Go ahead.
I agree. I was probably a little aggressive with the brush.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. All right.
I tend to do that.
Okay.
So,
and the glands are, you know, that's just the very most opening of the glands. The glands go deep into the eyelid. So just a minimal brushing on the surface, it's the heat that penetrates to those glands that's going to help you longer term. And if that's not enough, then remember, we have the technology to do it. You mentioned you've noticed it more since the cataract surgery. Most likely, you know, just with age, this continues to get a little bit worse, and we're forced to increase our management of it. If I remember, I think we actually did some treatment of your dry eyes before you did the surgery. So it was there. It just, like everything, has gradually gotten a little worse. So we have to turn up the attention to it. If you're not getting relief on those home treatments, remember that there are in-office treatments where we both can totally clear out those glands to start over again. Remember that the omega-3s in your diet can influence the new tears that are being made and improve the quality. And we also can do what's called intense light pulsation, which is essentially a light treatment that helps to improves the quality of the tears, actually gradually moves the quality of the tears in a positive direction. And ultimately, that's going to be we're going to get improvement.
When I was in there last time, you didn't have that light pulsating thing because I had asked about it.
So IPL, intense light pulsation, has existed for a long time, but it has only more recently been FDA approved for treatment of meibomian gland dysfunction, actually treating the eyelids. So we have a brand new laser, and we'll be doing that now that it's FDA approved for that. Yes. I know our first patient is going to be me. So I'm expecting to get that treatment within the week.
So I use the Bruder eye compress, moist heat one. Is that
yes?
Is that good?
That's
enough?
Good. And those stay hot for about 5 minutes. So doing 2 5-minute sessions. Remember that those glands are at the very back surface of the eyelids. So for the hot compress to be effective, studies have shown that it takes 5 minutes of that heat to get through the body of the eyelid to the glands. So it's the second 5 minutes, and your mask, those beaded masks like Bruder and Derm and others that you can get online or at our clinic, stay hot for about 5 minutes. So you need to do 2 5-minute sessions. I regret it's not convenient. I look forward for better technologies, but right now the glands have to be hot enough to help to melt those thick secretions, which happens at 109 to 112 degrees on the gland, not on the surface of the eyelid.
Okay, so if I go back to doing the little brush thing again,
yes,
how
gentle.
Long can I continue? Pardon?
Gentle, just once a day.
Okay, so how long should I continue that before I decide that it's not working and I should come in the office for some other procedures?
I'd expect gradual improvement over weeks. But if it's not improving, then we need to do something that it goes to the heart of the problem, which is deeper in those glands.
Okay, All right, then. Well, I'll go ahead and try that for a few weeks. And if I don't get any significant improvement,
then let's fix it.
Should that thick fluid start receding?
There's no way for you to monitor that. It's really a microscopic assessment. I'm glad to look at it for you, but I think you will feel it in terms of comfort. And remember, the whole point is you will be able to tell that when you blink, you have more and better tears, which is to say the comfort gradually improves.
Well,
it is when you blink that you're using those glands.
Yes. The issue that really bothers me, I guess, is trying to see things at a distance and seeing signs that are blurry from having all that liquid in there.
Right. So doing the brush in the heat, you gradually should be able to clear that away. If not, then we just need to clean out the old secretions from the glands so you start over. And that's a simple in-office spa-like treatment.
Mm-hmm. I've done that.
Yeah, I have too. I just did it this week.
Oh. All right. Hey, Marilyn, we have to run. Well, thank you so much for your questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a great rest of your day and a wonderful weekend. A quick break and then back with Andy in just a moment, talking about leading edge medicine today with our special guest in the studio, Dr. Michael Gilbert, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. We'll be right back.
Never beg a woman. She just thinks you're a wuss.
Oh my gosh.
Just a little begging.
Love advice from Dr. Mixon.
Yeah, really, Dr. Mixon.
Oh,
we're back with Dr. Love. Dr. Mixon. He has been called that occasionally.
Has
and
he?
And Dr. Gilbert, I know.
Who has never been called
that? My name is Lynette. Let's go to the phones. We have Andy calling in from Maple Valley for the doctors. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Andy.
Good morning, everybody. This is new for me. When I was diagnosed with having a congestive heart failure, systolic failure, and I've been able to manage it so far. Been taking all the medication they've asked me to do. But recently I was made aware of the possibility, and I'm asking your opinion on this or whether or not it's a good idea, is that like the drugs Cialis or testosterone enhancement, is this something I would avoid, or would this, from what I understand, like Cialis actually increases the blood flow in all the other areas, but also for the heart to it's actually good for the heart, from what I understand.
Okay.
Can
yes,
you fill
I,
me in on that?
Yeah, I would personally would take them both. But the Cialis, the chemical name is tadalafil. And tadalafil is a vasodilator. It opens up your arterial tree so you get better blood flow. But it allows your heart to pump more blood with less work because it's pumping it through bigger pipes, okay? So you get the same amount of blood with less work on the heart. And that's a nice thing. The other end of this spectrum is the testosterone. The heart is essentially a big muscle that never gets to rest. And testosterone, as you may have heard, makes muscles stronger. All right? There are dozens of studies out there showing that people with high testosterone get congestive heart failure much less often than people with low testosterone. It's one of the reasons that women get heart failure far more often than men do, because they have a lower testosterone load and their muscles are not as strong. Okay. So obviously, anything we do to make that heart, that muscle stronger and pump more efficiently is a good thing.
That is really incredibly good news. It's encouraging because I always I'm about to take a DOL test for I'm trying to become a bus driver. You know, as I'm retired now, I want to keep myself busy. I don't want to put anybody at risk. And there was a I was about to take this test, and so I was wondering if any of this would help me. It was congestive heart failure will show up. And they're well aware of it because they can get onto my chart and other things like that.
Sure.
So this is actually very good news. And clarity, I can't believe that you just opened my eyes about how it increases the volume of blood. Makes total sense.
Well, it doesn't increase the volume of blood. What it increases is the amount of blood that will flow through any given vessel just because it dilates. It opens the vessel up and makes it bigger. Sure.
Yeah.
And
that
since this was designed as an erectile disorder drug, you know, and what it does there is it allows more arterial blood flow into your genitals. That's why it helps men get better erections. But it also improves every muscle in your body. It allows you to exercise more vigorously. And it takes the load off the heart because the heart is pumping against less resistance.
Well, I am very much encouraged. Thank you so much for your comment. I'm going to take it to the bank.
All right. Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Andy. Just a few minutes left of our show today. We thank you for all the calls. They've been crazy busy on the phones. But let's take a few minutes. Dr. Gilbert, one of the things I'm surprised we did not get a question on was that RLE that you talk about.
I get that question every day, patients coming in and asking if they're a candidate for it. So RLE is an evolutionary step in our ability to do increasingly effective and predictable exchanges for the natural lens. When we hit our 40s, there's a gradual functional decline. The decline actually starts much earlier, but it starts affecting function in 40s, 50s, 60s, where reading becomes more and more difficult. Quality of vision gradually declines, and that's all decline in the natural lens. More glare at night, increasingly dependent on glasses. Nearsighted folk can't see near without bifocals or reading glasses over their contacts. Farsighted first lose reading, then intermediate, then distance, and they can't see anything without glasses or contacts. So exchanging the natural lens for the current generation technologies increasingly allows us to completely change the optics of the eye, give you distance, intermediate, and near vision without glasses. So very exciting. There are many people who are not candidates for LASIK, for instance. And the implants are almost always an answer in those situations. The sometimes by age, by 50, LASIK is not an ideal answer for most people. But that's exactly where the implant technology helps, because LASIK does nothing for near vision in general, fixes your distance vision, depending on how it's applied. But the implant technologies give you distance, intermediate, and near. So for adults 50 or older, but I have done it in so many people who are younger but farsighted. And I did a couple just within the last 6 weeks who were severely farsighted, one in his 30s, one in his 40s, and totally gotten rid of glasses and contacts now. The youngest I've done RLE was in his mid-20s, and he had a severe, very high prescription, way outside of the treatment of other technologies. Mm. Implant technology was perfect for him.
Wow.
And that was about 5 years ago.
Wow.
Now,
I thought I was the youngest.
I don't.
Dr. Mixon.
Well, you're close.
Yes, and we both had it.
You're very
well.
Close.
Yeah.
Right. And the implant technologies continue to improve. The ones that you have,
crystal lens,
the crystal lens, was at the time cutting edge, and that's the one I put in my younger brother. And, you know, I still occasionally choose it today. But the implants that the technology has evolved to allow us not to be so dependent on those muscles.
Yes.
Because, as you know, the muscles in niche, there is some variability in patients' ability to use the muscles effectively. You were better, way better than most, not surprising.
But I'm losing it now.
Yeah.
Now I carry these little...
Right.
Because if the print is too small,
it still
works.
Still works, but not as much as it did.
Not as much as it did 10 or 15 years ago. Yeah.
So the holy grail is still to get that functionality back. And there are new technologies that are not yet FDA approved that are working to be more effective and more enduring. But until then, we have implant technologies that do it by physical optics, so we're not dependent on those muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Holy grail, it's coming. We'll be able to use those. But I was unwilling to wait. I said, yeah, fine. You're going to do that eventually, and I'll be a daughtering, never mind.
Yes, that's right. Well, I don't plan to daughter.
No. Health and hot fare. And,
that's right.
Very good. Okay. Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
I did have an off-air question. Do
yes,
you have
ma'am.
Time for another one?
I'm delighted.
Sarah wanted to know, what would a basic eye exam be, or what should it be?
So I don't know about the word basic. Comprehensive is maybe a better term.
Okay.
I think that's what she means.
Okay. And
so
what could she expect?
Comprehensive includes measuring your vision and a refraction that would determine what prescription gives you your best vision to improve it, right?
Okay.
Glasses or contacts. Then we want to check the pressure. And then you want to check all the anatomical, from front to back, all of the anatomical physical aspects of the eye.
Of the eye. Okay.
From the cornea, the iris, the natural lens, the vitreous behind that, and the eyewall, the retina in the back of the eye itself. And looking, you know, we could start talking about all the diseases and where they present. But physical examination, and it must include either dilation, or there is a camera technology that can look out to the periphery of the exam. But if you were to list out, it includes a thorough retina exam, generally including dilation.
Okay, and that's where
that?
You, your eyeballs get real big, but it allows you to see in there.
So essentially, we have to assess both function and the anatomical structures from front to back.
Okay, and it's not scary. Sarah, if you're listening,
no.
Make an appointment with Dr. Michael Gilbert at Northwest Vision Institute. And I'm going to give you that phone number, and those listening today that would like to come in and get more information, like I did, and Dr. Mixon, here is that number to call. It's 425-450-2020 to get in to see Dr. Michael Gilbert and his staff. So thank you, Dr. Gilbert.
Gosh, this has been fun.
Isn't it fun? We love it when you come in. Dr. Mixon, this
2 hours
is good.
2 hours gone real quick.
Wow.
Hard to believe.
Quick. Yes, and we have like just a minute left of our show today.
We'll change stations and do two more.
That's right. We'll do two more hours. Yes, we will. Wanted to let you know, again, for the Galleri test, that is the screening test for 50 different types of cancers. We've been doing this, right, Dr. Mixon?
Yes, we have. And we're doing it
2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. And all three clinics will be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to call, set up a reservation, because we have to know how many blood draws we're going to do, and we're going to staff it appropriately.
Absolutely.
But it's a great test. Yeah, it's not... Well, it's $25 per cancer, but that comes out to $1,250. But it's the only screening test around that will do 50 different cancers.
It's amazing.
It really is. And
really amazing.
It's giving the patients peace of mind, whether they get the negative test or they get the, you need to go in and see your doctor. Let's find out what's going on with you. It's the Galleri test happening 2 weeks from today. That's Saturday, February the 10th. You do need to make an appointment for that, and you can do that by calling our number, 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG, or by going online to lmclinic.com. Hey, that's our show this week.